So we'll just begin. Everyone stay focused. We'll just begin. We won't do kirtan because we're running late. So we'll just straight into the class. So where are we up to? Anyone know? Which chapter? 68. What is 68 called? The marriage of Sambhava. Okay, and tonight we'll go from verses 27 to 39. No longer should the Yadus, chapter 68, text 27. No longer should the Yadus be allowed to use these royal symbols, which now cause trouble for those who gave them, like milk fed to poisonous snakes. Having prospered by our grace, these Yadavas have now lost all shame and the daring to command us. So there's no purport, but Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur will make some comment. So one of the main instructions in this section, we must be very careful about offense. Offense means aparad. Aparad. Arada, or Rata. This word means to worship. So aparad, aparada. What does that mean? Yeah, offense, but it's the opposite of showing respect or worship. Yeah, it means disrespect. Yeah, the opposite. Instead of showing respect, then you disrespect. And if you disrespect, then you commit offense. So we're seeing here that the Kauravas have committed an offense to Lord Balaram, to Krishna, and to the members of the Yadu dynasty. Now, if we are in the position where Maya is making an arrangement to try to lure us into a conflict situation. Conflicts come all the time. Always there's conflicts amongst, even amongst devotees, conflicts arise. Right? And it's the nature of the material energy to cause conflict. We see that Maya is always trying to cause dissension, disagreement between the devotees. Between everyone, but for us, it's between the devotees that we have to be most concerned about. So when these things are taking place, we have to be considerate of Krishna's will. What is Krishna's desire? Because sometimes we overreact to things. And why do we overreact? Because we may not understand what Krishna's plan is. Sometimes Krishna has a plan and he's making some arrangement. But we have to be very careful when the arrangement's being made, we don't get lured into a conflict situation. So that is the power of the material energy. Sometimes the material energy tries to cause conflict amongst the devotees. So Krishna will act according to the level of the offense. In other words, how much offense there is, then that's how much Krishna will respond or react. If the offense is very severe, then Krishna will give a heavy reaction. Now, as devotees, we have to understand that Krishna will ultimately take care of any difficult situations which are taking place, and if someone's committing an offense towards us or towards another devotee, ultimately Krishna will take care of that. Sometimes we think that we have to react. or we have to take care of things, or it's our duty. But it's not always our duty. Sometimes it is, but sometimes it's not. Ultimately, Krishna will take care of things. So we have to have faith that Krishna will take care if there is some conflict amongst different personalities. So we don't have to enter into a conflict situation ourselves. As much as possible, devotees need to avoid conflict. As much as possible. Sometimes you have to enter into something. You have to, if you know there's a wrong being done. But generally, devotees, we have to be very careful. And we see that those who are not careful, then they have to receive the reactions to their offenses. And the reactions always come. That's the thing. And Krishna doesn't let anyone go. You know, if you do something wrong, then Krishna will deal with you accordingly. I know myself, whenever I do something improper, Krishna always makes sure the reaction comes. You know, we can't escape these things. So we have to have faith. So here, Lord Balaram is disturbed, because he's not disturbed that he is being offended so much, but that Krishna is being offended and the Yadu dynasty are being offended. So therefore he wants to punish the Kauravas accordingly. So. Any points?
Can it be false ego coming? Sometimes because of false ego we react in such a way to displease others and offend them.
Always false ego. There's only two types of ego. What are the two types of ego?
Real ego and false ego.
Yeah, false ego and real ego. So if we're not acting in the real ego, which means Jivara Srupa Hoy, Krishnara Nitya Das, Krishna's eternal servant, then we're acting in false ego. And if you're acting in false ego, then you will get reactions. So anytime there's some problem, that means we're in false ego. Because if we don't react when there's a situation, that's real ego. False ego means we become offended very easily, get drawn into it. And I see that devotees who get drawn into conflicts very often, that's because they're not serious enough about their devotional service. Because when you're serious about your devotional service, you don't waste time getting involved in conflicts. Just like on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, the pastime was there with Arjuna had to kill Jayadrath. So you know that pastime. So in order to get to Jayadrath, he had to pass through other warriors. And he had to pass through Dronacharya. And Drona challenged him. And Arjuna went around him and said, no, stop and fight. Normally, we would stop and fight. Because a Kshatriya should not shy away from a conflict. If there's a conflict, the Kshatriya has to face. If he's challenged, he has to face. But he went around Dronacharya, and he kept going because he didn't want to be distracted for his goal. And I see when devotees get involved in conflict, the main reason is because they're not serious enough about their devotional service, because they don't want to get to their goal seriously enough. So they'll stop somewhere and have a fight with someone. Right? But when we're really serious about getting back to Krishna, then we just avoid these things and we keep going as much as possible. So, any points?
In devotional life, usually between devotees, there's not always right or wrong. It's very relative, like it's whose perspective is right or wrong. It's not always people's right, I was wrong, or something like that. So it's very hard to then, you know, think that he was wrong and I was right, or I was wrong and this is right. You have to be very careful in those situations, because some devotees who think of that point of view, they are thinking from our point of view, because of that also you get conflicts arise.
Yeah, it's good. So in this case, our guru is Stephen Covey. You know Stephen Covey? Yeah. What is he famous for? His most famous book was Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. And he had seven principles of management. And what is one of the principles? That's one of them, yeah.
Talks about controlling one's responsibility, choosing one's responsibility.
Yeah. One of his principles is win-win. Win-win. Right? whenever you're in a conflict situation, as Jamuna is saying, then it has to be win-win. Because there's two different, maybe you're both right, but maybe just two different ways of looking at it. So you have to make it so they're satisfied and you're satisfied. Then both are happy, win-win. No, that has to be your way, it has to be this other person's way. Kavi Maharaj Ki.
Yes.
They put it as the first statement they put is, so we both agree to disagree.
Yeah.
So that's how they started off.
Yeah. Both agree, that's fine. You don't have to argue about things, we just have to understand we have different opinions, that's all. Any other points?
One more thing is coming to mind. Sometimes we promise, we make such false promises. I'll do this, I'll do this, I'll boast you. And then when the time comes, you just back out completely.
You do that?
Well, anybody doing that, including me, is a very bad thing.
Yeah.
Either don't make a promise. If you make a promise, you must.
That's true. That's true. Okay. How would even Indra dare usurp anything that Bhishma, Drona, Arjuna, or the other Kurus have not given him? It would be like a lamb claiming the lion's kill. So this shows how powerful the Yadu dynasty is. They're so powerful that they can defeat Bhishma, Drona, and Arjuna. These are three of the most powerful people in the universe, practically speaking. Arjuna was taken to Swarga to fight on behalf of Indra and the demigods. So Arjuna was more powerful than Indra, his father. He's more powerful. And then Bhishma is more powerful than Arjuna. In the battlefield, Krishna had to jump off the chariot and attack Bhishma because Bhishma was going to overpower Arjuna. Bhishma was the most powerful warrior on the planet. And this shows the potency of the Yadu dynasty. That even Arjuna, Drona and Bhishma are no match for the Yadus. Because you have Krishna, you have Balaram himself. So because of these personalities, so the basic point is that when we get into a conflict situation, and Chanakya also says this, don't act like you're always going to win, because sometimes you're just not going to win. Sometimes, Chanakya says in warfare, you have to retreat. Sometimes that's the best thing to do. If you're in a conflict situation with someone, sometimes it's better just to, accept defeat, as it were. Just back off. Otherwise, if you think you're going to win every time, you'll definitely be defeated. So because of our false ego, then we think, I am right. But then two people, that's what arguments are about. Two people thinking that they are right, trying to overrun. There's one devotee, you can guess who it is, who I was speaking to today. And they said to me, you're not always right. And this devotee said to me, that's just because you don't see my perspective. So this particular devotee, who I happen to live in the same house with, so that'll narrow it down. I said, so how can we go forward if you think you're always right? And this person said, I don't think I'm always right, but you just don't see my perspective. And I said, well, that's not true. I do. I listen to your perspective. But, so this is where conflict arises, when we think we're both right, or when we think one is more powerful than the other. Sometimes you have to back out. That's the nature of conflict. So you see that the core of it is, what should they be doing right now? Backing out of the situation. Basically, they're challenging the Yadu dynasty, which is a huge mistake. Because they say, we are the emperors. So they became full of themselves because they're the emperors that they were. The Yadus were cursed by Yayati that they could never become. Yeah, the emperors, right? They were cursed. So Krishna and Balaram are in that dynasty. That dynasty cannot rule the earth, no? But still they're more powerful. So the Kurus should be understanding the situation. No? So this means that as devotees, sometimes when there's conflict, we just have to become humble, even though we might be right. But sometimes if the other person is more powerful, or you have to judge the situation. And Krishna is always testing us to see how we respond to any situation. Yeah, maybe you're right, but Krishna doesn't want you to enter into the argument. Sometimes Krishna wants to see that you'll back out, and that you'll let the other person feel that they're... You know, so it's very subtle. All these things are very subtle. But Krishna is always testing our consciousness. He doesn't want us to constantly be in conflict with others. So sometimes you have to know when to submit. So Balaram is trying to make a peaceful situation, but they're not responding properly, so we'll see what happens. Any points? Sri Badarayani said, "O best of the Bharatas, after the arrogant Kurus, thoroughly puffed up by the opulence of their high birth and relations, had spoken these harsh words to Lord Balaram, they turned and went back to their city." So, what is the problem with the Kuru dynasty at this point in time? Yeah, they're becoming intoxicated by pride. When we have some opulence, Aishwaryasya. No, that's the wrong verse. Jam Aishwarya Shruti Shruti. Then Queen Kuti says, Jamma Aishwarya Shruta Shribya. When you have any of those four opulences, the tendency is to become proud. So, of the four, which is the most intoxicating? Yeah, when wealth, that's the most intoxicating. We studied that in the pastime of. So many pastimes, but there's one in particular where Bhaktivinoda Thakur comments early in the 10th canto.
Indra.
Yeah. No, it was Manigriva and Nalakavara. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur specifically says that of the four, your birth, your learning, your beauty and your wealth, the wealth is the most intoxicating. And when you become wealthy, you become very proud. So they were intoxicated by all of these things because they had all of them to different degrees. But because of that pride, they became very proud, and they even offended Balaram and Krishna. That's extremely intoxicating. But that's the nature of the material energy. When you get some facility, you become full of yourself, and when you become full of yourself, then you begin to commit offenses to others. So you have to be very careful of these things. So once again, they went back to the city. They turned their back on Lord Balaram. Actually, this is an offense. It says in the Nectar of Devotion, chapter 8, what is chapter 8 called? Chapter 8 is offenses to be avoided. So it lists 64 offenses in devotional service. And one of the offenses to that, these are mainly seva aparads. They're offenses in deity worship. Right? One of the offenses is to turn your back on the deity. Sometimes I see the devotees chanting in the temple and they go like from Prabhupada to the deities back and forth. Actually, that's not really the way. If you're going to walk back and forth, you really should go across. Right, because you're turning your back constantly. Honestly, devotees are becoming less and less slack about this point. We should not have the back towards Prabhupada or the deities. You see, in Melbourne, when Prabhupada sat there right on that Vyasasana, and there's a lecture, you can see the video, and Prabhupada's giving the lecture. Prabhupada actually says to everyone, don't put your backs towards the deities. And you'll see when Prabhupada was speaking, if you look at the video, everyone's sitting side on, and they're looking at Prabhupada like that. Prabhupada said, do not have the back to Guru or to Krishna. That should be actually the... So it's an offense to have your back. No? Many offenses are there. You read in Nectar of Devotion, it says, don't talk in front of the deities. You see after class finishes? And everyone starts talking like that. You can't do like that. You know, if you're talking about devotional service, yeah, but if you're not, then you should just go outside the temple. You can't just have casual conversations. Especially in the deity room itself. Right? It's a big offense to speak. No? You have to be silent in front of the deities. No? One time, some devotees, they went on to one of the festivals in Mayapur. Next year, Gopanim, they're going to do the Maha Abhishek of Panchatattva. They do it every 5 years or so, or 10 years or so. Every 5 years, they do a Maha Abhishek. Really, really big one. So I think next year they're doing the Maha Abhishek for the deities. So then the devotees were going in and they asked Jnanivas Prabhu, they said, what should we do when we go in? He said, the most important thing is do not talk. Anyone who's in there with the deities, do not talk. Do not break silence. It says that. That's an aparad. So all these things are there. It says you can't cross your arms like this in front of the deities. You can't. Sometimes you see people having darshan, they're all just like, you can't do it like that. You know, you have to do like this, or you have to, you know, you can't just do it. Different things are there. It said you have to sit properly in front of the deities as well. It said you can't sleep in front of the deities. Sometimes giving class, devotees fall asleep. If devotees fall asleep, I say, hey, Hari Bol, I stop the class. And I say, Hari Bol, I say, if you're tired, you go and take rest. These are aparads. No? So you can't turn your back to the deity. So they committed an offense here. You can't turn your back to Lord Balaram. You know, just, Lord Balaram, we're not going to submit. They all turn their back and walk. It's offensive. It's improper behavior. You can't do like that. Yeah.
That is when the all the doors close. So can we go around and chant?
Yeah.
Then we can chant back and forth.
Yeah, because the deities are closed. Then. Yeah. Even you can sit with your back to the deities when their doors are closed.
Yeah.
But if the doors open, yeah, then you can't do like that.
And I want to ask you, like, Prabhupada is here. And then can we go on the side, like walk on the side? Because it's not like walking in front of Prabhupada, but on the side.
Walking?
Yeah. See, if you want to chant, just go on the side and walk on the side. And yeah, the ladies are closed, and then you walk on the side.
Just be conscious, though, that Prabhupada's there, that's all.
Yeah, but on the side.
Yeah, so yeah, obviously, yeah, if you're walking right up and down directly in front of him, that would not be good.
Yeah.
So on the side's not so bad, but the point I'm making is just be conscious. I see devotees, like now, like when I joined, it was a lot more, devotees are more conscious. Now I see there'll be a class on and the temple will be packed and devotees sit right in front of the deities with their backs straight to the deities. Like, I don't feel comfortable doing that. You know, when I joined, it wasn't like that. We all were always conscious of the deities or Prabhupada. Now I see devotees, even I see them sitting on the step in front of Prabhupada. Like Jamashtami, you know, devotees just go and sit right in front of Prabhupada and start chanting the temple. Like, Prabhupada's right there. I mean, I know the temple room is full, but there still has to be some etiquette. You don't sit right in front of your guru with your back there. They have to be conscientious, that's all. No? So it means they've become proud. So it's either two things. You're either proud or you're ignorant. Right? If you're ignorant, okay, it's not as bad, but then you should know. But if you're proud and you still do it, then... Any points?
I'm sometimes it's like old Matajis and all, they can't sit on the floor for me. That room is there.
On the steps?
Yeah, steps of Prabhupada, because some Matajis, they can't sit on the floor. They're finding it difficult.
Yes, it's better they sit on the steps, like on either side.
Yeah.
That's better.
But sometimes it's full on the side as well.
Yeah, if it's super full, then, you know, Prabhupada would probably be understanding, you know. But I mean, sometimes when it's not as full, and devotees are doing it, so be conscious. Seeing the bad character of the Kurus and hearing their nasty words, the infallible Lord Balaram became filled with rage. His countenance frightful to behold, he laughed repeatedly and spoke as follows. So, interesting point, while Balaram was being spoken to by the Kurus, he didn't say anything. Right? He could have chastised them. But Lord Balaram understood something was about to manifest. So that's one reason why he didn't say anything, because there was a pastime that needed to manifest. But as soon as they left, he showed his actual mood. And sometimes we do like this, like if someone's getting angry and they're talking, sometimes the best thing to do is just not to say anything. So the conflict does not arise. But as soon as they left, then Lord Balaram showed his actual mood. Right? He was disturbed. So, the main defect was they did not understand who was superior in this circumstance. Right? And I remember many years ago I listened to a lecture, I've told you many times, by Bhakti Vijayapurna Swami, because he's very expert with Vaishnava etiquette and subtleties in devotional service, Satachara. And he made the point that if there's any friction in any relationship we have in this world, it's because we, either one of us or both of us, are not understanding the etiquette, the proper etiquette in that relationship, right? Who is superior, who is inferior? You have to know, right? You have to know who's more advanced than you and who's less advanced. Just like Maharaj is here, right? Which Swami is here? Bhakti? Rasa?
Rasayana
Sagara Maharaj. So disciple of Indrajumna Swami. So he took sannyas. Indrajumna Swami gave him sannyas. So actually, I've been a devotee longer than him, right? But in terms of ashram, he is superior to me. So who offers obeisances to who? I offer to him, right? Because he is sannyasi. He's given up sex desire. I have not. Right? So therefore, he is in superior position. So I offer obeisances to him, right? So we have to know who is superior, who is inferior. If I think, oh, Maharaj, I've been devoted longer than you, yeah, you should offer respect to me. No, then I'm breaking the etiquette. No. So we have to understand. This is what devotional, it's very subtle. These things are subtle. And you have to understand, you have to work these things out as devotees. We have to know who is superior, who is inferior. No. If someone's inferior, then you have to offer respect. Sorry, you have to give compassion. If someone is superior, then you have to offer respect. Right? You can't have big false ego. Even I've seen sometimes sannyasis come and devotees don't offer obeisances. You know, sometimes I see the Maharaj walks in, someone doesn't offer obeisances. Then that means that you don't understand things properly. You have to have the right understanding. You have to understand who is more advanced than you, who is less advanced. All these things need to be understood. Right? Who is superior in Varna and Ashram, all these things have to be understood. Then we have to offer respect. So, the conflict is arising because, even though, and it's a subtle point, they are the ruling dynasty, but the other dynasty is more powerful. And within that dynasty, Krishna and Balaram are present. So who should be offering respect to who? Right. Who should be offering respect in this pastime? Gurus should be respecting the others, right? They should be, right? Because Krishna and Balaram are there. They are a more powerful dynasty, but they've become intoxicated And they're thinking, no, I will not offer respect. They should respect us. So now there's going to be a problem. The friction is arising. Someone's getting really upset. Now, who's getting really upset? Lord Balaram. Now, there's one person in this universe you don't want to make upset. It's probably him. Right? Because if he gets upset, you're really in trouble. But they don't understand. So therefore, that's what's about to happen. So we have to understand the subtleties, sadacha. You have to understand. So if there's ever a conflict, if there's ever friction between yourself and another person, another devotee, then analyze it. Why is the friction there? It's because either both of you or one of you don't understand how to work in that situation. So you have to be subtle with these things. You know, I look for this all the time. I remember my Guru Maharaj, she gave a nice lecture here. I was either here or in Sydney. It was not long after I joined, but I listened to it. And he said in the lecture, he said, I am always fearful about committing aparad. Right? And you have to be like that as a devotee. You have to always be fearful of committing offences. You have to constantly be conscientious. Right? And you have to always be seen, right, in your relationships. Right? Is this causing an offence or is this not? You know, if there's something there, you have to be very subtle. Sometimes, you know, there's one devotee I know, we've been friends for many years, but I saw the devotee on Janmashtami and the devotee didn't look at me. Right? So I could feel there must be something there. And I've got a bit of an idea of what's going on, but then I haven't seen them again. So next time I see them, I'm just going to say, hey, what's up? You know, there's obviously something. You didn't look at me, so, you know. I say, is it this? Is this the problem? Or, you know, not that. Deal with the situation. Otherwise, don't let it go on and on and on. I don't want to distance our relationship. But it means there's something there. Some friction is there. So the nature of the spiritual world is that everyone gets along. Why does everyone get along? Because everyone knows how everyone stands and they know how to relate to everyone. So, you know, if we cause problems, fix the problems. Don't let these things go on. You want to have problems with devotees for years and years and years? You want to have conflicts for, you know, some devotees don't speak to each other for 30 years. Yeah, just because one devotee took the avocado or something like that. Yeah, whatever. And then after 30 years you say, oh, what was it you two were fighting about? And then they say, oh, this happened. You know, this happened 30 years ago. You say, really? That was all it was? You can't reconcile it? Even myself and one of the other senior devotees in this community, in this temple, you know, there was some conflict. You know, that devotee acted in such a way and I felt hurt by the way they acted, and I don't think I was wrong. You know, I don't think I was wrong. I thought about it very carefully. You know, if I was wrong, I would have gone, but I think they had done the wrong thing and I was upset and it was reasonable. But then another senior devotee came to me and they said, you two are not talking? And I said, yeah. And they said, why? And I said, well, that devotee did like that. And they said, anyway, that might have happened, but don't let this go on, because it's not good for the rest of the devotees in the community. So then I said, okay, because that I took it, Krishna was speaking to me through that devotee. So I took the instruction, I went to that devotee, even though I did not feel I was wrong, but I went to them, and I said, sorry, like that. And then they said, oh, no, it's okay, and then, you know, now it's okay again. But sometimes that's what we have to do. Sometimes that's what Krishna wants us to do. It's not easy in the material world, huh? Material world's a complicated place. You know this saying, they're mental, you know this? All us Western devotees, I don't think the Indian devotees, I never hear you guys say it. But amongst the Western devotees, we have a saying, they're mental. You know, when another devotee is being weird, we say, oh, they're mental. You guys don't say it though, right? Yes. Oh, you say it? Oh, you say it? How do you say it? Oh. Okay. That's different. That means crazy.
Father means mental also.
Mental also, okay. Yeah, it means that they're acting too much on the mind. Yeah. We say it, like the Western devotees, we always say, oh, they're mental. Like that. So that's the material world. The devotees, they get like mental, you know. So you just have to deal with everyone very carefully. Yeah. There's only a couple of alternatives, you know. You just socially become disengaged. That's why the sages went to the forest. That was for that reason. It was just too troublesome in society. So they go to the forest, and which is very difficult to do. Or you live with everyone here in the community, but you have to be very humble. Because, I don't know, just things come up all the time. Even on the farm, we only have a few of us there, but every week something comes up. And it's like, you know. But they have to learn, be humble and treat everyone nicely. And always keep things smooth. Prabhupada says, the proof of how much you love me is how much you will cooperate once I am gone. No? If we really love Prabhupada, we will cooperate under any circumstances. Any points?
One of the principles which I learned long time back is Chanakya Pandita was the chief minister something in Chandragupta Maurya's rule. So right, one time Chandragupta Maurya said, Guru Maharaj, why don't you stay in the kingdom? I can get your advices rather than staying in the forest. Chanakya Pandita said, no, I am not staying in the kingdom because you are the king, you are the lawmaker, you make all the rules for me also. If I am in the forest, right, you will come to that place which is not under your jurisdiction. Whatever I see, you listen to me. I am your guru, I should not follow your rules, you have to follow my rules.
It's good.
Forgive that you not stay in the kingdom. He said, I never stay in the kingdom.
Yeah, it's a good. That's a good point. Yeah, Chanakya would not take a wage. He would not take a wage because then you become controlled. So it's a good point. Okay. Which verse?
31.
31? 31. Lord Balaram said, clearly the many passions of these scoundrels have made them so proud that they do not want peace. Then let them be pacified by physical punishment as animals are with a stick. So this is called danda. It's the final stage that we come to. Right? First of all, we try to negotiate. Like we say to our kids, okay, be good. Yeah. If you do this, I'll give you this. Right? If you're nice, I'll give you this. Behave yourself. But then it gets to a point where you start to say, hey, danda. But these days you can't hit the kids. Right? Otherwise they take you to court. Yeah, you hit your own kid, you go to court. In my day it wasn't like that. You know, my father sometimes he would get me, just hit me on the bottom, like bang, bang, bang. Yeah, if I do that to my daughter, you know, she'll take me to, she'll go to school and make a complaint, and then you know, the school will ring me up and say, why are you abusing your child? And that's what happens these days. So everything has changed. But danda means by force. Sometimes we have to rule by force. That's the only way to get something done sometimes. So Lord Balaram is saying that's the only way we can control these people. So you have to be very heavy. So the basic principle is that the parents and the guru have to be strict. Yeah, you have to be strict. Yeah, it doesn't mean you have to be physically strict, but you have to chastise. Sometimes you have to yell at someone to get something done. Otherwise, there's no other way to do it. Just like sometimes I say to my daughter, I say, Asesha, I'm getting angry. I just let her know, where do you want to go with this? You want to take it up or you want to listen to me now? If you don't, then I'll have to get angry and I have to really like that. So the guru has to chastise. If the guru doesn't chastise, then we don't improve. The senior devotees, we have to chastise. Sometimes senior devotees, we have to be forceful. Otherwise, devotees don't want. And also, the parents have to be like that. Just like when the kids are talking in the class. They have to say, "Hey, stop talking." Otherwise, you have to be forceful. Otherwise they don't improve, they don't mind. So that is the system. Has to be some force. So Lord Balaram here, he knows there's no other way. The only way he can deal with the Kurus, he has to be very heavy with them. So, any points?
Sometimes Srila Prabhupada used to be heavy with some children. Somebody spoke or children were crying or something. Prabhupada would stop and try to...
So, specifically in the Sanskrit, it is mentioning that the behavior of the Kurus is called asadava. What does that mean? Scoundrel. Or it means not saintly. Asadava means not saintly. Devotees, we should always act saintly. We should be saintly. Devotees should be saints. Like all of us. Now, it doesn't just mean like, the most advanced devotees, but all of us should be saintly in our character, in our behavior. We should act very nicely. No? So now what's taking place is that the Kurus are becoming asadava. Now, Balaram is there. I mean, if Balaram is saying you are unsaintly, that's a very heavy chastisement. You're acting improperly. So he's about to become very heavy. And what is causing them to act like that? If you go back in the Sanskrit, mada unnada, puffed up by mada. Here it is translated as by passions. Mada means like madness. Sometimes we become mad. We become puffed up. If you're puffed up, then basically you're becoming like a mad person. And if you become like a mad person, then you will be chastised. So you see, the Lord Balaram is being very heavy with them because they're acting inappropriately. So he has to chastise. Any points?
Is it mentioned?
It means Bhishma is aware of what's about to take place. He knows what's going to happen. And he knows what he's dealing with. So he knows. It actually mentions that he wants to see this. He wants to see Balaram's power. So he's going along with it because he knows what Balaram will do and can do. But he wants to see that. Just like he said to Krishna. Bhishma is Krishna's devotee, but he said to him on the in Kurukshetra, he said, "I will fight with you, Arjuna, so hard, I will make you break your vow." And that's a devotee saying that to the Lord. Because he wanted to see Krishna act in that particular way. So here he also wants to see Balaram. So he's not going to stop because he wants to evoke Balaram's as a devotee. Anything else? Only gradually was I able to calm the furious Yadus and Lord Krishna, who was also enraged. Desiring peace for these Kauravas, I came here. But they are so dull-headed, fond of quarrel and mischievous by nature, that they have repeatedly disrespected me. Out of conceit, they dare to address me with harsh words. So if you commit offenses, your devotional life will be ruined. If you read the Harinam Chintamani, it says there are 10 offenses against the holy name. And Haridas Thakur gives, when was Haridas Thakur's disappearance?
Yesterday.
When was Haridas Thakur's disappearance? Yesterday. So Haridas Thakur points out in the Harinam Chintamani, there are 10 offenses when chanting, and for each offense, there is a remedy. So 8 of the offenses are based upon... 8 of the offenses are based on improper knowledge. To consider the chanting of Hare Krishna to be imagination, or to equate the demigods' names with the names of Lord Vishnu. Right? This means you don't have proper knowledge. So how do you rectify that offense? No? Yeah, you improve your knowledge like that. Now with the other two offenses, number one and number three, number one is sadhu ninda. Yeah, when you blaspheme devotees. And number three is guru avagya. Disobey the orders of the spiritual master. Right? Those two offenses... For number one, you have to go to the devotee and beg forgiveness. Only the devotee that you offended. Right? It can't be any other devotee. Right? I can't offend you and then go to someone else. You know, I can't offend Jagannath Ram Prabhu and then go to Janeswara Prabhu and say, please forgive me for offending Jagannath Ram Prabhu. Right? You'll say, you're obviously, something's wrong with you. Because it doesn't work. Right. So how do you get forgiveness, or how do you counteract that offense? You have to go to the devotee, you have to beg forgiveness. Same with the offending or disobeying the order of the spiritual master. You have to go to the spiritual master, right? And you have to declare what it was that you did, right? And then ask for forgiveness. Right? And then the guru, if he chooses to, he will forgive you. So that is the remedy. So here, they've committed offences, but then there is a way to overcome that offence. So how is it to overcome the offence? Yeah, you have to go to the yadus and you have to say, please forgive us, you are superior. So every problem we have in our devotional life, there is a remedy for it. If you don't want to take the remedy or act on the remedy, that's your problem. Then you have to live with the consequences. Then enjoy yourself and suffer in the material world. Sometimes we're too proud to bow down before a devotee and beg for forgiveness. So that's okay. Then live with it. And you will suffer. Prabhupada said, simple for the simple, complicated for the complicated. Any points?
Previous class time, Guru Balram, he teaches Duryodhan a lot of
club fighting.
Now, these past times coming up would mean that Duryodhan would be schooling him to Guru Balram, or is it some other?
Is it what?
Is the past time coming after that?
No, yeah, it's after. Yeah, he's already taught him how to fight with a club and all these things. Yeah, because Duryodhan thinks that they're the master race. Same as Hitler. Hitler thought his people were the master race, and then he was crushed. So same as Duryodhan, he thinks, we are the superiors, and then about to be crushed. Okay. King Ugrasen, the lord of the Bhojas, Vrishnis and Andakas, is not fit to command when Indra and other planetary rulers obey his orders. So now, for the next few verses, up until verse 39, Lord Balaram is going to repeat everything that the Kaurava said. So he's speaking to himself. He's in disbelief. So basically he's going to say everything they said, and he's going to say the same thing. The same Krishna who occupies the Sudama assembly hall and for his enjoyment took the Parijata tree from the immortal demigods, that very Krishna is indeed not fit to sit on a royal throne. So why is Balaram angry? Yeah, because Krishna is being offended. So when should we become angry? Yeah, if someone offends the devotees, Krishna, or the guru, we have to become angry. If you don't become angry, right, then you get the reaction. You get the reaction. You have to defend. Just like the other day, I was at the farm and some guests came, some Indian, they came to feed the cows and like that. And we were speaking a little bit, and they said, oh, we've been to Vrindavan, and we went to the ISKCON Mandir. But they said, we prefer the Prem Mandir, which is just next door, just down the road. There's Kripalu. That is his place. I was a bit tired because we're doing a witch hunt. I was a bit tired. I was like, here's Puggle. Puggle. I said, here's Puggle. And then they were a little like, oh. And then one of the ladies, she started to like defend him. Like that. And I said, no, no, no. I said, you have to show me in Shastra. Right. They say, oh, he says he's an avatar of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, like a reincarnation. I said, so, okay, you show me that. You show me, and I got a little bit forceful with them. Right. And three of them were being submissive, but this one lady, she was, you know, she, no, 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 I've listened to him. It is correct, all this stuff. I said, no, 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 it's not. So I had to, you know, because otherwise they're offending Krishna for a start. Right? And, you know, you're coming onto ISKCON property and then you're going to say some other thing like that. After a while, I just let it go because, you know, she wasn't going to listen anyway. But I made the point. No? What is the point? Yeah. The point is show it in Shastra. You know, if you're going to make your statements, back it up with Shastra. You show me where it says. It doesn't say Chaitanya Mahaprabhu will come twice. Where does it say that? Show us. He already came, right? 500 years ago. So now, you know, just because Kripalu, you know, goes like this in some photograph, you know, oh, he's the Yuga avatar. He dresses up in yellow and he goes, well, no, I mean, what is that?
But even that is still, I mean, there was a neighbor of mine, she used to say that Kripalu is actually the incarnation of Radharani, and to that extent.
Yeah, they say Radharani, they say Krishna, they say Lord Chaitanya, you know, just whatever they feel like on the day. You know, in some pastimes, not pastimes, but some, you know, I stayed at his ashram in Varshana. We had holy name retreat, so we rented the ashram. So, you know, all the pictures. So there's some pictures there where he's kissing a picture or a statue of Krishna. And then there's others where he's kind of dressed a little bit like Krishna. He's kind of acting, oh, what are you? You know, are you the devotee? Are you Krishna? Like, well, he doesn't even know what he is himself. So the point is that if it's there, if you're going to say these things, it has to be in Shastra. That's the point. You know, I was a little bit tired, so I just got a little bit. It was funny. Watching your reaction.
Some Brijvasi Maharajas are there, there are some Maharajas in Brijvasi who are treated bona fide. Are they bona
fide? We have to take it case by case. There's some.
There's some Maharajas who are bona fide.
Yeah. There are some. But if you're unsure, then you have to check with the senior devotees. That's all. Okay. The goddess of fortune herself, ruler of the entire universe, worships his feet, and the master of the goddess of fortune does not deserve the paraphernalia of a mortal king. The dust of Krishna's lotus feet, which is the source of holiness for all the places of pilgrimage, is worshipped by all the great demigods. The principal deities of all planets are engaged in his service, and they consider themselves most fortunate to take the dust of the lotus feet of Krishna on their crowns. Great demigods like Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, and even the goddess of fortune and I, are simply parts of his spiritual identity. And we also carefully carry that dust on our heads. And still, Krishna is not fit to use the royal insignia or even sit on the royal throne. So basically in that verse, Lord Balaram is summarizing the whole Bhagavatam. This is Balaram himself establishing that. Yeah, Krishna is the Supreme Personality. So this is the essence of the whole Bhagavatam. Krishna is the Supreme Lord. Balaram's saying it himself. Balaram's just about to drag Hastinapur into the Jamuna, right? And he's saying it. So, we Vrishnis enjoy only whatever small parcel of land the Kurus allow us, and are we indeed shoes, whereas the Kurus are the head? Just see how these puffed up Kurus are intoxicated with their so-called power, like ordinary drunken men. What actual ruler with the power to command would tolerate their foolish, nasty words? So any power we have in this world is so-called. Any power you have, it's not really power, it's just a little bit of something. So, ultimately, all the power lies with Krishna. And the only conclusion of all of the Vedas is that one should surrender unto Krishna. That is the final conclusion of all the Vedas. Okay. Any other points?
Sure.
Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki.